Hi there. Thank you for downloading, listening to, and watching the Lean Into Artcast, a show where a couple of visual storytellers get together and take on various topics that tend to become, take presence, become front of mind. What's the expression, Rob? What am I looking
haunt?
For here? Haunt? Well, I guess haunt would be, that is one of the
confuse,
emotional words.
Beguile?
There we go.
Trap?
That's good too. All of those are true. That tend to do all those things to us when we embark on this endeavor of communicating with images. My name is Jersey Drozd. I'm a cartoonist and teaching artist. And the other guy you just heard is?
Oh, hey, I'm Rob Stenzinger. I do user experience design and research, and I make games and stuff.
Good to see you again, Rob.
Yeah, good to see you, Jersey. It's always fun to, I don't know, like, this is a funny thing where the, you ever think, all right, we put this out often weekly, and there's a, you know, we get some great signal back from our listeners in various forms, right? But you just ever think, like, is this like the car podcast? Are people, or honestly, it's probably an art desk podcast, right? Maybe a chore podcast? Like, when do we appear in our audience's experience? I wonder.
That's a really good question. I mean, we do stream the show live, so we know when we appear in the lives of the people who show up in the chat as
true
we
that.
Stream live. And then Friday morning, we'll get a couple of nice little messages from people on Twitter saying, like, hey, I'm listening to the show now. But yes, it would be interesting to find out in what ways they engage with their stuff, whether they listen to the audio version, the video version, what time of day, what activities are they doing? Is this like a doing the dishes kind of thing to listen to? Is this like background accompaniment to doing your work? Yes. Mm-hmm. Maybe another survey is due in the near future.
If folks would be interested, right? Sometimes as someone who composes surveys, often as part of, you know, providing the service that I provide, I'm ironically not that often willing participant in surveys, except once in a while, it's the podcasts that get me, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, we need to know our listeners and whatever. And for us, it's not about an instant turnaround for sponsorship or whatnot. It's just a form of structured feedback, because unstructured feedback, super awesome. You know, just the tweets and replies, stuff like that. People who show up in the chat, which is awesome, right? That's, but then the whole thing where it's like, oh, now we can add this up easier and take a look at I don't know, what impression that gives us. Because of course, if we've put out a survey like only once or twice before, right? So, we would be quite thoughtful about it. So it'd be, all right. I guess I'm convinced we can give it a try.
Thinking out loud is always fun. Working through an idea together. So we typically do this show with we pick a single topic and we try to look at what it looks like when we're engaged with that particular activity or that topic, and then we back away and look at it, you know, more analytically, like, okay, what are the whys of that topic? Why engage with it this way? How do we think about it? So what is our topic this week, Rob? What are we talking about?
Well, it's that idea of you have a goal, like maybe a goal that's bigger than this year or bigger than your, you know, the next few years, but it's a thing that you're working towards, kind of a, or maybe it is, maybe it's super immediate, but it's kind of a mission where you want to help others do something related to that thing. Like, let's say that, so you've built up skill with your craft and you're ready to serve somewhere, and you care a lot about where you go with this. You want to do a certain type of or style of comic or game or whatever, right? That how do you sort of make, and as our title says, how do you make your case and share it with the world so that, you could recruit others and you could be recruited by others to join in, you know, like-minded missions.
How do you plant your flag? How do you, another metaphor that would be probably relevant to the cartoonists who listen is like you're setting up your table at a convention, right? How do you, this visual case making of this is what I am and this is what I have to offer. Are you interested in having an exchange of value, right?
Sure, yeah. I think that makes sense in a lot of granularities. I mean, you could put this, you could just slap the title, marketing stuff. Let's talk about it. But it's totally related. But then
it's totally related. But I think you're speaking of something that's a little bit more. Well, you said mission focused. Like if you have mission, mm-hmm. let's hit the transition music, and then we could maybe pick apart what you mean by that word. How does that sound?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like
it.
All
right, and then continuing the tradition.
Oh, gonna get psyched up.
Promise me you'll tell me if you ever get tired of that, Rob.
I love the music. So I do that when I watch the show. Like, so that when you play the DVD, I sometimes don't play it on marathon mode. The marathon mode, it'll just skip like Netflix, right? It'll go straight to the next thing without the video intro.
Which is a mixed bag, right?
Yeah.
Because like when I was watching Voltron Legendary Defender, you know, that it's 20 seconds of music. It's not a big ask. And sometimes I just want to watch that beautiful animation where I get to see that little vignette of each character that I've fallen in love with being awesome for a few seconds, right?
Yeah. You get snippets and flavor of the story. And yeah, it's repetitive. Yes, it's it depends on the show. But I guess the ones that we're talking about, there's this kind of promise for great adventure and excitement. And I'm like, I want to hear the promise again. I like it.
Yeah.
I agree, and I'm here. I'm all for this.
I want to hear the promise again. That's good. That is what it is, right? Like, are you ready? Yeah. Something good's going to happen. Yeah. Just another 30 seconds. All right.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. So let's pick apart this word mission. We're already getting some feedback in the chat room. Troy, Shadowing Tronics, says, finding a like-minded crowd was one of the reasons I started my review site. There's a motivation to start to plant a flag. Like, I can't be the only person who feels this way about this thing, right? But then, like, when you start thinking about, like, what a mission is, how is that different than, say, looking for your peers, looking for your tribe? Or is it different?
It doesn't... I think it's dependent and it's related, because you could say that, and this is a framing. This is my two cents. This is not guruism and branding the idea of mission, you know, where, you know, now we always mean this particular thing, but a mission to me seems like it's this overarching theme of purpose that goals might fit within and projects might fit within. And so it's sort of
so finding your peers can be part of fulfilling your mission, right?
Yeah.
So for instance, here's a case in point that is timely, is that I co-organized this comics festival called the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival, which this year we're celebrating our 10th anniversary. Hooray for us. And part of fulfilling the mission of this event, which is to create a festival that celebrates comics as a medium and create meaningful experiences for young people who are interested in comics, or providing meaningful experiences between young people and comics, finding people who agree with me on this, cartoonists who are willing to step up and be this friendly, engaging front line on the ground, engaging with these kids, that is a piece to fulfill my mission. But it's also something that I just want, because I like being around people who feel that way, right? So it's like partially like fulfilling the need to connect with people who are saying, like me, I can't be the only one who feels this way about comics. But that is part of the framework of solving this other problem that I'm trying to solve. Problem, mission.
Yeah, right. Some words like problem or task or need, want, whatever. I mean, a lot of stuff can get overlapping, right? Mm-hmm. And they provide different nuanced perspective on similar catalyzing essence. But like, I do think Mission is, it has that difference because you're, when you, you, so let's see, I don't know which part of the show to go into this. Cause I think the practical side where you think, where you have, you to accomplish bigger things, you inherently need to connect with other people because you are, even if you're taking advantage of the magic of digital publishing, right, where the scarcity isn't there as far as the things made of atoms, but then maybe the things you put into the digital world are popular enough or whatever, but like you're not doing that on your own because there's the response of your audience and whatever. So there's at least you and at least an audience, but most likely it's almost everything's more complex than that because there's also the market and the other people who create in your at least create in your medium for your similar market, right? You're there together, your peers, and acknowledging like what's happening there, you may want to gravitate toward it or away from it. So, you know, maybe there's not enough of a distinction as far as just comics as a medium where you made a comic event that was purposefully youth targeted, right? Youth oriented. That's an essential part of it as opposed to saying, well, let's add some youthful things to a bigger event.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of on the same mission, but is it same enough?
Right. Right. Yes. Cause I have friends who have tried the other approach where the Kids Comic Con people, not Kids Comic Con people, it's the Kids Love Comics organization. They go and get a slew of tables within a larger event. So they become like sort of like this little island inside of a pre-existing Comic Con. So this is adding youthful to something that didn't originally have that, which I'm sure presents all sorts of different challenges. So similar mission, but different approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just smiling, thinking of tabling situations that I've been in and also observed where you can have very different markets, sort of just like a deck of cards shuffled right next to each other. And yeah, like adult matters next to kids stuff, whatever. And it's not like I'm being like a prudish thing. It's just about sort of, well,
no,
it's kind of like how you'd want to find the people with a similar mission where there's a critical mass and you can now accomplish something bigger than you could by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think we kind of got a sense of what assumptions and what definitions we're operating under for this. Okay. So where do you want to go next?
I think we should totally keep coming back to the KRC and A2CAF. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, thematically interesting too, but I also like that's dealing with it on a bigger organization scenario, right? Where, finding your mission could be just trying to get the kind of work that you want to do as an individual though, as well. So find, you know, like planting your flag and what that looks like is, well, like we've talked about recently, your portfolio. Mm-hmm. And what do you put out there and how do you describe it? And who are you trying to speak to specifically with that? Right. And then if you have a strong sense of that, then hopefully you're making sure that the things that you're putting out there, like your social media presences, if you do business that makes sense in a way on LinkedIn, the social networks, hopefully there's some overlapping complementary message among all those things that sort of points to, well, like for me, I often engage in the service of, you know, user experience design and research, and I do it because of these things. I want people to understand that I want to do it to help people and that we're going to have interesting conversations and we're working together. If I'm at their business, I believe in them. And also I believe in their audience and I'm serving their audience and the problems and pains that they need and have. Not every organization wants that, right? They want someone to be like, well, make the conversion funnel better, convert and set that other crap aside. And I don't want to do that. And I want people to know I don't want to do that. And I won't do that, right? It's important to create that. It's a, and then and say that, well, ask myself, well, does this come across? So I have this mission. I've thought about my goals and bigger purpose that thematically aligns it well enough. And okay, is that coming through? That kind of thing. And I think by doing that and then seeing what happens, right? So you know, put your portfolio out there and, you know, connected with all the social presences, and that can work. I see you have, I'm distracted by where the cursor is in the show notes.
That was,
could be just, coincidence.
I accidentally left it there.
One way that I help, that's super funny because I think it's a nice place to go next, is okay. What you make conveys what you want to do. I mean, you've talked about this, right, Jersey? I mean, the kinds of projects and stuff you've been involved in and chosen to not be involved in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't remember if I'm certain I've shared this on the show before, but very early in my career, I was offered to a pretty good paying gig to draw pornographic comics. And I mean, and that's a pretty extreme example of like where I won't go, you know. And it's like they told me how much it was, and it was a lot, especially for somebody who was just starting out. But I was like, I don't feel comfortable drawing that kind of stuff. And for the audience that I want to work for, I think it's important that I have like a pretty, I don't want to say a clean record, because I don't have anything. If you want to draw that stuff, that's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. But for me, I felt that I should not have that in my history. Also, I remember very clearly in 1998, so again, just starting out, and Antarctic Press offered me and Tom Root the opportunity to draw the Ninja High School swimsuit special. And I came back to Tom saying, that's great news. I'm really excited to do it. But can we change the name to Summer Special? Because I don't want to draw anything that a kid that is like not marketed, is impossible to market to children, right? Mm-hmm. So even though it was like a beach story with girls in bikinis and stuff, it's like it didn't have any kind of salacious or like male gaze stuff in it. It was just a funny story that happened to take place in the summertime, right? And Antarctic was really cool about it. And they was like, yeah, sure, we can change it to the Summer Special, no problem. So things like that, I think all the time about like, how does this contribute to my overall body of work? And even if it's something that's work for hire, that it's like, well, I'm just doing this for the money, I'm still thinking about that. Like, is this going to be in my, if you find this in my, like when you're doing like a Google search for me, is it going to be something that that doesn't represent the kind of stuff I really enjoy doing? I feel like that's a luxury that not everybody has. And I know at certain points in my career, I have not had that luxury, and I've drawn things that, I don't think I'd want to do much more of that, right? I did it purely for the money. And if somebody came at me, and this happened once where somebody came at me and they said, like, why don't you do a whole bunch of technical drawings of in the interior of a car? Can you do it over the weekend? Thanks, I knew you could. And I was like, no, I can't. And I won't. So I said, I want that to be the thing that I do the rest of my life.
And why not pay attention to that? And, actually, there's a lot of practical matters too, where, I mean, we always can think about how could our circumstance be better or different, and you know, current, like how your business is set up and who you're engaging in trade with and all that. But yeah, I mean, realistically, you know, you need to functionally get paid, because that's how it works in our society. So And I get that the reality and the culture has evolves and gets more complex, because there are people who do things that are extremely oriented toward different audiences, right? That I would be puzzled to figure out what the overarching mission is among those things besides just have fun and get paid, right?
right.
So everyone, you know, adjust for your own tastes. But I've been in situations where, you know, as far as taking on clients, where I had to say, I need to think about this to my boss, and consulting situations, because the circumstance just wasn't, you know, one was a gray area that I needed to think about, and it was a Facebook app, and I was like, is this what kind of behaviors is this encouraging, and how do I feel about that? And thankfully my boss didn't fire me instantly, and I had time to think about it. But all that matters, because it's always one of those things where, depending on the kind of work you do, even if the kind of work you do is always secret, that can be a thing where it's like, no, that doesn't fit with my mission. If what you do is forever secret, maybe that's fine for you. Maybe it's not. Either way, it doesn't have to be like a super deep moral thing. It could be just that, well, you want to talk about your work. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good distinction to draw too, is that you're talking about other kinds of, I'm speaking from the standpoint of a freelancer, self-employed, where I have a little bit of extra luxury and latitude and privilege there. Whereas when you're working for a company and then something comes across your table that you're like, I don't know if I feel right about this, that's a whole nother situation.
I think it is, but it's especially in the realm of if you wear a hat of design in any way, and mm-hmm. well, like if you are in a position to contribute to shape the outcome beyond executing with style, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's you have the ability to potentially reshape stuff, and it's worth practicing negotiating that, like you did. It was an interesting example with Arctic Press. You know, getting the summer special outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's saying, well, this gets me more toward my mission, and maybe not the words you had in mind at the time, but.
No, I certainly didn't have those words at the time. All I knew was that I wanted everything I did to be something that children would be able to read. Now, interesting counterpoint. So Carrie, Mushin Girls in the chat, she brings up this conundrum basically. It's like, I'll be the first to admit that I am fortunate that I had that clarity or that clear sense of purpose and mission very early on in my career. When I was on the Stuff Said podcast years ago, Greg Shiga was asking me about that. He's like, well, like not a lot of people know right away, like, this is what I want to do for this audience, like right so early. And I acknowledge that, like, I'm very either myopic or lucky that I found the thing that clicked for me very early. And I've been very happy there, you know? Carrie asks, what if your intention is to help, but your body of published work has a different tone than your newer projects? For instance, I wanted to be a part of A2CAF, the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival, but I didn't think the small comic I did was a good kid's story. The main character is a nutball and it's pretty dark. So, I mean, one, as an aside, one of the reasons that Kids Read Comics, the festival, changed the name to the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival is because we're specifically trying to be more inviting to people who make stuff that's not specifically for children. So that's one thing, is like you could have applied anyway. But the second thing is, I think this is a good point, is like, what if you decide that you want to take a pivot? I would immediately think of people like Roald Dahl, who did kid stuff and grown up stuff. And there's like a long Shel Silverstein, like there's all these famous kid authors who also did adult stuff, stuff for adults too. Right. I don't think it has to be an either or. I think that in my case, it was, you know, it was a constraint I was happy to put on myself. I never felt constrained by that, but what do you do, Rob? Like if you have to build this trail, like the, what you do tells the world what you have to offer. What if you're trying to pivot to something else, or you want to pivot at least a little bit to service a different audience than what you typically serve?
I could offer that there's also not, you don't have to pivot. You could work in parallel. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, you split your efforts, right? But I was working on Guitar Fretter and Art Geek Zoo overlapping for a number of years. So I would typically keep it pretty subtle and not emphasize that I also make video games when I table at comic events. And I would just be there to emphasize the comic product, because this is the audience that relates to that product. So it's just about emphasis and focus and having a clear message for that given venue. So yeah, I haven't had that be a problem at all.
What about, it's been a few episodes since we've talked about like what I, you know, nicknamed the Rob Stenzinger coat of arms, which you don't have to go into great detail in, but what you have a sort of incantation to test projects to see if they coincide with your mission. I'm wondering, like, how do you sit down to define, you know, who you want to serve and why, and like what projects, and like coming up with some kind of rubric for measuring whether this project or that project coincides with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The coat of arms is kind of a blunt instrument, and it needs it's sort of a it's almost like a plain Lego kit where it needs some theming, right? You need to add your own stuff to it. And even it doesn't work on its default state. The default state is, it's essentially four prompts, and it's I seek to do what I love for a community I care about using tools and methods I believe in to engage in a sustainable trade. And it's those four elements that then you need to dig deeper of, like, well, what does that mean and why? So what is a sustainable trade for you? What does do what you love mean for you? And all that stuff, it's super, like, every one of those statements can be just picked apart and thrown in the trash, but they're a good catalyst to start thinking. And I've even tried to evolve it, and it gets more complicated, and I haven't been able to memorize the other versions. So I just keep it, and it's a start. So community I care about is really interesting, because that's the unification of both the businesses that I'm working with and the audiences that I'm working with. And so, you know, digging deeper, what does that mean? I find that is fairly flexible, as long as there's somehow a sense of service-mindedness to those communities. It's like, I can buy into that. Yes, let's go work on something together. This is fantastic. Using tools and methods I believe in is one of the biggest stumbling points I've found, because I guess I'm incredibly opinionated about tools and methods. This is where a lot of things happen, where haphazard application of, you know, just do this thing, and it's really just ritualistic. It's not actually for it's not a thought out tool that can help us reach a purposeful outcome, right? What is our purposeful outcome? If we don't have that, that's what we better get first. Let's not throw tools at it, that kind of thing. So tools and methods I believe in, that's this little tornado of, you know, interesting conversations with places and teams that I've served. And oftentimes it's fairly well met and it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. But yeah. So was I going somewhere where you were hoping was useful with that?
Oh, no, I just wanted to model that activity, because, like, sometimes I'll catch myself saying, you know, in my frustrated moments with all the different hats that one has to wear, to use the old cliche, I'll just sigh sometimes and say, like, look, I just want to make comics for kids, right? And that is such a simplistic, like, sort of, like, I wish song, you know, to say out loud.
It's the Disney prince princess thing.
Yeah, I just want to be part of your world. Well, what does that mean, right? Like, I just want to be part of that world. It's like I catch myself falling into that rhythm of thinking, and then I'll have to back up and remind myself, well, if you're frustrated, let's evaluate all the things that we're doing, and are the things that we're doing adding up to this wish song? And is the are you being overly simplified or simplistic in your thinking when you're defining your wish song on this, right? So I like this idea of standing back and abstracting it out just a little bit and asking yourself, okay, well, this thing that I say I want to do, what does it look like? Who is this community that I want to serve? You don't always know until you start leaving the trail of things, right? Of like evidence of what you want to do. Charles Tofield's in the chat asking, like, when you're trying to enter into a different market, should you work for people for free or for very low? Does it matter that you don't have anyone to vouch for you in that industry? Well, the free work that I personally do is I just make little experiments that I can put out into the world to demonstrate this is the thing that I enjoy doing. And two things, I haven't made something to bring value to somebody else for no money. I've done it for me, right? So I'm investing in myself. And because it's an experiment, then I don't have to worry about, like, pleasing any particular client, although I make up persona clients when I'm making my experiments just for the fun of it. You know, the vouching, I'll, you know, the vouching can happen through either people, like other people in my the field responding to it, which has happened in the past, like peers who are in this particular area that I want to work in, saying a nice thing about it online. Now I've got a testimonial of sorts, or something on your list, Rob, is giving a talk. You know, something that I think is valuable to help tell the world about, like, what you stand for is there's in a lot of cities and even in small towns, like Ann Arbor is not a big town, right? It's like what, 150,000 people? You know, it's small to medium, I would say.
It's a special thing. Like the talks per square foot in Ann Arbor is off the chart.
True.
As far as, yeah.
Very true. But, you know, Ann Arbor is also within a couple hours drive of a lot of different parts of Michigan, right? So, I mean, I'm sure with a little bit of research you could find you could do Ignite talks. You could do these things called Nerd Night talks. And it's pretty easy to apply for it. It's something you're doing for free, but it also challenges you to put into words and into a slide deck what is it that you actually stand for, right? What is it that moves you about, like, the work that you do? And now you've got this other piece of evidence floating out there of you. And because it's a free talk, it's not like, you know, you're not speaking to 200 people, right? Like a Nerd Night talk, it's like maybe 30 people in the audience, and it's in a bar. So it's like, it's a pretty forgiving audience. But if it gets videotaped, or if you videotape, if you video record it,
if you get a large device that looks like a shoulder mounted, I don't know, bread box with a lens on the front,
with the suitcase on the side that has the cables running into it, because that's where the actual tape deck is recording.
Make sure you wear a back brace. Helpful tip.
It's a union job, so you shouldn't actually lift it. But if you get it recorded, right, now you've got this other piece of evidence. And for sure enough, on my website that I use to market myself as a teaching artist, I have a Nerd Night talk that I did twice. I did it once for Nerd Night Ann Arbor, or not Nerd Night, Ignite. I did it for Ignite Ann Arbor, and then like I wound up getting invited to do it by O'Reilly to do it in Lansing for like their year's best of kind of thing. So I got to do like a more refined performance of it on a bigger stage. And I'm like, this is a great little piece of evidence to let people who may hire me to teach, they can see what I look and sound like, right? And if there's the extra evidence of, you talk about vouching, I'm on this big stage, you know, there's an O'Reilly logo that pops up on the thing and so on, right?
Exactly. That's, a lot of interesting layers there. And I think artists, it depends on your own personal interests and personality. Like, do you, a lot of people, I don't know, this is funny. I don't know if this is old information, but the anecdotal evidence that I hear is that, it's one of the, like, public speaking is a very much reviled thing by a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And I can tell you that I'm a bit of a combination of an introvert and an extrovert. I have no problem being extroverted if I see a purpose in it and I'm helping. And doesn't matter the crowd at that point.
Yep.
But that, you know, so what is your thing? What puts you in the situation where you're like, this is worth it, this is important? And I don't know, that feeling of helping a lot of people, certainly, I don't know, that works for me.
Where at a convention after party, I am totally the guy standing at the back of the room, just like hoping somebody talks to him, right? But at an event where, like, I see the purpose the utility that I have in this situation, I'm going to go convince a bunch of people that comics are really cool. Or in case of the Nerd Night talk I did, which is on YouTube, and it's like the five things I learned about writing from watching Saturday morning cartoons. It's like, okay, I get to tell people why I love Saturday morning cartoons so much, and like what purpose they have beyond just being entertaining commercials, right? The utility was there. What are you thinking, Rob?
Well, you combined a couple things. There's a like classic advice that a lot of folks who publish and podcast and stuff you'll hear is that you need to go put the things you care about into the world. I mean, much like shadowing mentioned, if you publish something and share it, make it findable, that kind of thing, that that represents what you're really into. This helps send a signal, and the talk aspect of it is it just has a lot of different. It's like a an interesting, multifaceted solution to this. Because even if you are introverted, if you can get through that whole giving a talk thing, then people talk to you afterward, right? People will come up to you.
Yeah. After my cartoon talk, I got, like, I don't want to say mob, but I was having trouble leaving the building because so many people wanted to come up to share their favorite cartoon, you know? And it was almost like, it was like they wanted me to say, yes, that was a great cartoon, right? Like, they were like almost looking for that kind of, like, I really like this show called blah, blah, blah. Do you remember that? And I'm like, yeah, that was an awesome show. And I'm like, oh, good. And then they walked away, you know? I'm like, and anybody who's listened to the show for long enough knows that neither Rob nor I ever present ourselves as gurus, but the fact that that talk happened and I was on the stage and I was speaking so passionately about it, I sort of earned a level of expertise in that moment, right? Just people, because this is the practical part of the show and not the philosophical part, somebody's going to wonder, like, well, that's all well and good for you, Jersey. You have thousands of hours of experience doing this, doing podcasting and so on. Fair enough. But when I'm doing a new talk, it's not the easiest thing in the world to put together. And so my method that I've used for when I'm doing like the free ones, like the Ignite ones and the Nerd Night ones, is I will make my outline, I'll make a series of bullet points, and I sit there with that outline in front of me. And I'll just sort of read through it and construct my thoughts out loud. And I'll like sort of try to connect the bullet points in the outline verbally out loud. And I'll do that maybe 6 or 7 times in a row, take a break, sit down, do it again, and whatever was really good will usually stick, and I'll find myself saying that over and over again. And I'll do this maybe 20 times, and then I'll record it. Like, once I've got it to where it's like, this feels coherent and logical, and it sounds conversational, I will actually sit down and record it with just my phone, and then I play it over and over and over again. I'll maybe listen to it like 60, 70 times while I'm drawing. And just so like that repetition, that pattern happens. So I'm not actually writing it out with text. I'm speaking it aloud and then just doing that enough times to where the good ideas stick. Once I feel like the good ideas are sticking, then I record it and then I just listen to it. Up until the moment I go on stage, I'll be listening to it over and over and over again so that it is, I'll be rehearsing it without actually rehearsing it, if that makes sense. So This is a doable thing. I don't think you have to have years of experience talking to do this kind of thing, and especially on a small stage. So,
I'm a huge fan of that one. Then you can tack on to that if you're able to help at events where you can create a workshop and deliver that. So again, if it's mission that you believe in and it's something that you're interested in doing, like, that's a great outlet. That's a different kind of thing, because it's, in a way, it's more pressure than a talk, and in a way it's less pressure than a talk, because for the most part, you're everyone's doing a thing and you're helping do a little bit of orchestration along the way of like, hey, let's think about this. Now let's try that thing. What do you think about it? And then you do that for, you know, a few loops. And then next thing you know, it's, you know, half hour, 45 minutes or more have passed. And people made a thing and you were there to help facilitate. It's pretty helpful and interesting. Some of the workshops I've done are structurally pretty simple. Like, I think one of my simplest ones is sketching the happiest kitty in the universe. And, you know, even though that one took me less time to develop than something like paper prototyping power up for game design, it sure made a lot of people laugh and, you know, packed a bigger crowd. So I don't know. But in any case, you brought up a couple things I wanted to emphasize that I think are very practical that we can just think about for a second, is the providing of value. And it's important to value your time, and that think about, like, if everyone in this market, every one of your peers just gave everything away for free, how does anyone exchange value? It tanks the market. So find out what's appropriate for you in that way, so you can engage in trade and get paid to do what you do. Because you should. If you do something of value, get paid. Then if you are, looking to develop and practice, then find a place that's aligned where it's like, I would volunteer doing this. I believe in this, and I have these extra layers of benefit where I'm developing product. I am, you know, getting my name out there along with the mission and things I believe in. I'm demonstrating my skill and spreading the evidence, and you're creating this essentially a trail of evidence and experience that you can then, you mine that, you put it into your portfolio, you put it in, you share, you know, you share that. And it's just, it's this thing of, it helps you in those next conversations, which I think something that probably it could be a whole episode on its own, but you mentioned the persona, which we've talked about personas before. But you said it was almost like hypothetical clients that you want, like, I mean, this is my paraphrasing, but it's like the clients that you want.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah. The clients that I want. So, okay. Parenthetically, here's like the disclaimer. Rob and I are very service driven. We make a lot of stuff thinking about who's actually going to use the stuff that we make. Not all artists work that way, but that's the way we work. And so when I'm making a new comics project, like for instance, my most recent mini comic, Baron Von Bear and The Case of the Cursed Cuckoo, I'm thinking about, okay, who is the audience that I'm trying to make this thing for? Who do I want to engage with this thing in the purest way possible? It's somebody to say, everybody should read it. Yes, that's a wonderful idea, and I hope that everybody does read it and enjoy it. But I'm thinking of like one kind of person, and I'm thinking like, okay, fourth or fifth graders, like 9, 10, 11-year-old kids who are into creepy stuff and into cute stuff, right? So you get this idea of like Hello Kitty meets Doctor Strange, which is like the elevator pitch I've been doing for that mini comic. And so I think about what's their worldview look like? What kind of things? What is the amount of scariness that's appropriate for that age? Like when I was 11 years old, when did I feel like that was crossing a line? And now I went from feeling like the thrill of horror to I'm horrified, right? And I know the difference. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was the first movie I saw in the theater by myself, and I was like 10 years old when I saw it. And I remember thinking like, ooh, this is crossing a line. This is like the good kind of crossing a line. This is scary in all the right ways, right? And then I saw, same year, American Werewolf in London. And I was like, no, this is the bad. I don't want to watch that ever again. You know, that was the bad scary, right? And so I thought, let's think about like what was happening in those two different stories, and like, was there something visual? There's something horrifying in Indiana Jones, but it feels like there's it doesn't feel random. It feels directed. It feels like it's under this bad guy who's doing this bad thing. And there was something kind of random and nightmarish about American Werewolf in London. There was something kind of surreal that my brain wasn't ready for in American Werewolf in London. Does that make sense? So I'm inhabiting that mind space. I'm thinking about my experience, and I'm also thinking about the kids that I work with all the time. You know, I'm fortunate that I have a lot of firsthand experience working with that age group. So I create this personality that I'm speaking to, and I'm thinking about what's appropriate and what needs do they have, and what kind of story can I construct that'll be meaningful to them.
That's pretty great. So to me, let's see, a persona can be anything that's functional for you, this hypothetical person that you're trying to reach and help. But then there's a couple layers you can add to it. You can say, well, I want to help this particular person, and they have these needs and interests or behaviors, right? Ideally behaviors, if you're going to start testing these ideas, right? Because you can observe those things. And then you can think about like, well, how am I communicating to this group? How am I, in a way, merchandising my work for this group? How do you know is it understandable in the, I don't know, my business name, or is it the other elements of what I use to brand and communicate, and how I other, I don't know, words and ideas I associate with this, and particular products too, where you can say, well, this cover I was thinking of initially, I need to come up with some new candidates because this design pleases me. It doesn't really reach out to that audience. And then use that as a touchstone and keep coming back to it. And then, of course, you know, see how it works over time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a good example
is... That persona is a great idea.
Yeah. Yes, I have changed covers on my books for that reason. Because like the first cover I did was pleasing me as an artist, and the second cover I did, which I thought was not as visually interesting to me, was more clear, easier to read from a distance, and it was attracting the people who I wanted to read the book. So yes, that kind of iteration is, I think it takes a little bit of the detachment from the work, but I think that my favorite work I've done is stuff that I've done with some other person in mind when I made it. You want to take a break?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's take a break and then look more into this at well, we've been philosophical already. I mean, it's like cat's out of the bag.
Yeah. But you know what? I don't think anybody's surprised or disappointed by that. So, okay,
it's kind of a philosophical topic. Sorry.
Yeah, it kind of is. So we're going to take a minute and a half to thank some people who make this show possible, and those people happen to be the folks who support us on Patreon. Yes, patreon.com/leanintoart is the website. What is it? It is a platform, a service where you can provide a monthly upvote. If you believe in Rob and you believe in me and what we do, you can say, hey, I want to contribute like as little as $1 a month to help make the show more sustainable. And we want to thank five people who have been doing exactly that. First up, Jonas Zavasky. I had not seen this name before. Thank you, Jonas, for believing in us and what we do. Tim F., thank you so much for supporting the show. And Ashley Knapp. You can find Ashley on Twitter at Control-Alt-Lee. And Becca Hilburn, longtime friend of the show. You can find Becca on Twitter at NatoSoup. And finally, Gail Bushman. You can join them all at patreon.com/leanintoart, where you will find all the shows we make, including the Extra Leans. Look at this, Rob. Extra Lean number 132 recently dropped. And for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to all these extra shows. What are they? It's me and Rob sitting down with, you know, actually not even a topic. It's usually us just riffing live and arriving at a topic. So you can sort of see how the topics of the show emerge as two friends talk about their worldviews on making things. Once again, the website is patreon.com/leanintoart. And thanks to everybody who has been supporting us there. It means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Also, once every 132 episodes, Jersey drops an F-bomb.
That's true.
It's for free.
For free. Well, it's not, I mean, it's behind the paywall, but yes, there is an episode in there where I cuss.
Well, it's like this free bonus, I guess.
That's right. No, for as little as a dollar a month, you can hear me cuss at Rob and hear Rob react to that. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to get some mileage out of that one.
Well, it's not going to happen again for a long time.
I know.
I mean, I literally only allow myself one of those a year. So, all right, let's figure out what the next transition music is going to play. There we go. Now we're in the next part of the show. All right. So what are we talking about now?
Oh my gosh. Well, let's see. So we can always ask why. I think why is pretty helpful at any point in the process. And, there's a, so why would you plant your flag? Why do you want to do this? Because you could be in a situation where your career is functioning. It's, you know, you're doing the thing that's what you want to do or close enough. And, you know, there's no flag that has to be planted. So, but if you're looking to, again, you know, find that connection because you do care about some kind of mission, you may want to find either a just different stories to tell about, like, oh, in a given year, super interesting thing happened and I went with it and tried, right? For instance, I think of this as, in a way, it's like casually or seriously, or it's like, here's the mission thing. And this goal I set out, and I'm marching towards something that I hope I'm making progress on. And here's how I go about it. And you think about your goals and projects and stuff, but then there's stuff that just happens as you do start to plant a flag and you do start to share. There's a feedback loop where, there's one time, like, I collaborated with some folks on a talk for the museum in person, right?
Oh, okay. Oh. It, My video blipped out for a second. Yeah, we had a little bit of a bandwidth hiccup, so I missed what you just said.
All right. Well, just in case everyone missed it. So there's the whole casual versus serious thing. You heard that? Mm-hmm. Where in a way, like so the quick reframe it up again, the serious angle on this is you have your goals, and your goals are themed with this overall mission. Maybe you don't have your mission in, you know, 5 years ago, but then it builds over time. You're like, gosh, this is a real theme here. This is helping me write stuff better to reach out to who I want to reach out to. That's great. I think that's making your own homemade, you crafted this machine that is your career, right? But then there's the stuff that can incidentally happen. And I think that's the casual meetup, because you were starting to plant flags and share stuff that you, that has your voice and the things you believe in and who you want to serve baked into it. I kind of attribute that to this thing that happened a couple of years ago where someone reached out to me to collaborate on a talk for the museum computer network community, the MCN folks. And I'm like, sure, you know, this sounds, after a little bit of chatting and whatnot, it totally fits the mold of like, well, I think I got a small payment for this one too. So it was like, it was a paid speaking gig, and it was, just sort of, what was I talking about? It was something about, UX or design. One of the articles I put out might've been like in the collaborate, like Columbo era, whatever, but like a couple of those things just put out into the world and someone stumbles across it because honestly they had their panel set up and they were, they needed a replacement because one of their people dropped out and there was still a few months to go. And, you know, that was their reason. And my reason was like, yeah, this sounds like fun. It's another way to, represent, user-centered design and, collaborating and, building and testing ideas and stuff. So sounds great. And I don't think that would have happened how would have they have been able to detect what I care about if I wasn't publishing anything, right? It's
right.
Pretty straightforward there. Because, we didn't like meet in a hallway or at a talk or whatever. This was just, on Twitter.
Wow. Yeah, there's pardon me, there's the showing up aspect, but then there's also the making the stuff and leaving a trail aspect. And going back to this whole idea of like, instead of looking for opportunities, being prepared for opportunities, I think having your clear statement prepared makes those opportunities very easy to negotiate. That's part of it. But easy to bridge, right? When you have a very clear way of establishing what your value is. I've had meetings with potential collaborative partners where it's like, I'm hearing a lot of stuff that makes you say like, we're probably not a good fit together, via con Dios. I hope that you find success, but I don't think I have what you want. And then I've had conversations where within 3 seconds, I know like, yes, this is going to be a really, really good, where the collaborative partner actually said to me over the phone, like, I think we're going to be really good friends. It's because we both showed up with that clear statement. I'm like, yeah, this is what I believe in. Yeah, this is what I believe in. And boom, yes, our beliefs are very much in harmony. And even though we do very different things, we're going to be able to make good stuff together, that kind of thing. But that also requires that you have that statement in mind, and so you need the statement, you need the evidence, right? Like, or at least
So, do you have only one shot at this?
I have had so many conversations. I have talked with more schools and libraries than I can keep track of anymore, right? In like the 11 years I've been doing this, so. No, you get many, many, many shots at this, and it evolves over time, right? My very first teaching gigs, I didn't have my shape, size, line, and color routine developed yet, you know. It was a very different thing. It was like I talked about inside outside. Like that was the framework that I approached it from. Like, is this an inside thing or an outside thing? An outside thing is you show, and an inside thing is the thing that you say, you know. So like not only do my lesson plans evolve over time, but like the way I approach and the language that I developed, right? When I first started teaching, I was doing it for the money. It was purely mercenary. I needed to find some other way to subsidize my income as a cartoonist because I wasn't getting much work. And so I did it for the money. And then I realized that, like, whoa, this is really meaningful. As a matter of fact, when I did it, and I've told the story 100 times, like, before I got into teaching, I had an opportunity. I was given, a signal came out saying, like, hey, we know you're a local cartoonist. We're a library. We want somebody to do a workshop. I was like, I have no business doing that. I flatly refused. And they're like, well, we'll pay you. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm not the person to do that. So, and then 4 years later, I'm really hard up for money. I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to teach now.
Oh, interesting. That's what, yeah. So, I mean, we could have, you know, leaners in the audience thinking in that same way. Like, was it, what was unappealing about that?
Oh, low self-esteem. I thought
you didn't think you were up to the task?
I didn't think I was up to the task, and I also thought that I didn't have the stature necessary to do it, right? Mm-hmm. I was published, but I didn't have that many books to my name yet. It was like one special, a couple backup stories in Ninja High School, and I think I maybe drew one or two issues in Ninja High School at that point, but I didn't feel that body of work was enough evidence to say to the world, I have a right to stand in front of people and tell them how to do this, right? Like, I felt like I need a ribbon. I need, well, the Wizard of Oz, right? Like, the Scarecrow doesn't have brains, but, you know, these men have no more brains than you do, but they do have a diploma. Here's this artifact.
Yeah.
Here's this artifact that tells the world that I have a right to stand here. I didn't have a diploma. I had a couple books in print, but, you know, they're comic books after all. So, like, it was a lot of that kind of thing. Like, I just didn't feel, and it's like, there were other, like, truly famous cartoonists who, like, lived in the area. I'm like, they should be doing the class, not me. And then it wasn't until I finally did it and realized that this is something I would enjoy. And then I also realized that, oh, wait a minute, just because I'm not as famous as this particular artist who lives down the street doesn't mean that I don't have something to say about it. So, yeah, it was something where I had to learn that for myself. Is that what you're looking for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because within there, it's like the getting... It's funny, whatever it takes to be in the position where like a lot of this, the whole planting your flag and finding mission and all that stuff and clarifying it, it doesn't just happen all at once. And it can seem wholly unappealing because it sounds like this is a whole other job. This isn't the thing I'm here to do. It's not why I showed up. It's the, you know, I'm making the art, I'm telling a story, or making a great experience. It's not about these other trappings about, I mean, it sounds like, you know, that's a lot of business. So
it is
about marketing and selling, yeah, and all that.
And research, because like when I started, my first proper teaching gig was with a nonprofit organization who had a project already built. And I was just being plugged in as the teaching artist. So like they had the network of schools worked out. They had the oversight and administration. They had the teaching expert brought in to help like sort of like manage and guide the way that this thing was going to go. And all I had to do was come up with a 10-week lesson plan, which is actually no small task. But I mean, it's like that's all I had to attend to.
Yeah.
Right? A 10-week lesson plan is actually pretty darn tough. I didn't have to do any of the other research. Like they just told me what schools to go to and when, and I just went, right? So like once I was done with that project and that project finished and then it wasn't going to get funded again, so it's like, well, now you're on your own. I was like, okay, well, how do I find schools and libraries who even want what I have to offer? Because now I've got like a finely honed thing, right? I've got something that I actually know has value and I can communicate that and it's ready to be to have the value exchange. well, now I have to start doing research. Okay, what nonprofit organizations are in the area have anything to do with like writing or teaching writing and literacy, right? Okay, I can help them. How do I, like, what libraries in my area can I reach out to? And then what librarians should I reach out to? Do you reach out to the director? Do you just go up to the circulationist and say, hey, I'd like to lead a workshop, right? No, there's like a specific person that I found out the hard way that I'm supposed to talk to that person, not that person, right? I'm wasting this person's time. I should talk to that person. So it is a whole nother job, and it's tough enough to come up with your mission and with the evidence trail, but then there's a whole nother level of like, well, how do you even find the constituency to whom you can help? And then once you start doing it a little bit, then suddenly the signal starts coming back, right? Like, then I started like, oh, so-and-so at this particular library said you did a good job. I have need of that. Can you do that for me too? Right. But that didn't happen right away. That took years. I want to say it took like 3 or 4 years of really hard work before that started to happen.
That's such a hard situation to be in, but I don't think it's unfamiliar or on its own, where it's like you had a product and then where's the market, right? And some of that stuff is it's out of your control, but then being able to be findable as the circumstance changes, right? So like mm-hmm. you can act on those things. It's like the general awareness and demand, you can sort of like, if you have a lot of money to invest, well, right, you can generate demand by, you know, ad campaigns and find how what you're providing is adjacent enough to a particular thing and communicate it in a way that gets people's attention, all that stuff. I mean, I guess, right? But I mean, mm-hmm. it works for large institutions. But like when you like what you have, I think as an asset in this situation would be, I guess what makes you it. What's a strength as far as being a smaller business in this situation? I suppose.
Well, yeah, what is the strength of being a sole proprietorship teaching artist business?
Because like you're floating on the waters that aren't quite in the right spot yet where you don't have a huge client list yet or whatever.
I see. So what's the upside, and what's the leverage that you can find in that situation? Is that you're trying to figure out?
Yeah. I mean, because in a way it's like you can just be, what was
I can tell you right now that and I still have this wonderful problem of my name does not command 1,000 children to show up at a thing, right? Like, no, I never go to a school visit and the kids are like, oh, it's Jersey Droz, thank God. There's like, hey, there's a cartoonist guy here and this is cool, right? So the advantage is that I can do small venues and it's not considered a failure, right? I can do a workshop where 6 kids show up and I give those kids the same kind of performance as if there were 100 kids in the room. But the administration isn't going to look upon that librarian bringing me in as like me letting down the organization, right? And they don't have to worry about making accommodations for, well, we're going to have to put a wait list on this, and we're going to have a registration and make sure that, you know, we have accommodations for all this extra traffic in the building. Having done events like Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival, where we bring in artists who their name does command 1,000 children to show up, That's the logistical problem we have to figure out, right? How are we going to manage like where the signing line is going to go on this, right? Nobody's got to worry about that when they hire me. And back then they didn't either. So I could create more intimate experiences where, you know, the kids have more of my attention. And they're going to get a more meaningful experience out of working with me, and a more memorable one than, say, like just getting their selfie taken with me, right? The memorable part of that experience has nothing to do with me as a personality. It has to do with the experience that the kid had. That's the value.
Yeah, it's not an encounter with a celebrity. There's a more in-depth.
Yep.
There's a more in-depth experience that has a greater, more layers, more richness to it.
Like, so,
and more possibility for a wider variety of outcomes.
So to borrow language from my friend Jesse, he said this to me once, and I thought, gosh, that is getting amended to my mission, is that part of what drives me is that I want to be an adult who is not a child's parent who tells them that they matter, right? That is what's driving a lot of what makes me look for the kind of work that I like to do. Is this an opportunity for me to tell a young person who is not my child that they matter in this world, right? And create an experience that tells them that, right? So, and it's tougher to do that when you're a celebrity, right? I think, at least it seems to me that it's tougher to do that.
Oh yeah, I mean, how do you show up as how do you just instantly change the context of what's possible with interacting with you? Mm-hmm. I had no idea where you were going to take this, and so this is a strength. Like, this is the small, this is the person who doesn't have the giant amount of followers, strength. That's pretty cool. It's
all the advice is like, oh, you have to be authentic. Well, what does that mean? But if you want to take it in a direction, you could say that kind of authenticity is a lot easier to achieve when you are a small fry.
And it is a luxury in a way of being in that position, because because you will no longer have that same flexibility. It becomes a scarcity, and you can only probably offer it in very special circumstance.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a nice way of putting it. Shadowing in the chat is saying, and yet Jersey would lose it if he ever saw a Jared cosplayer. Jared meaning Jared the Abominable Snowman from my graphic novel I did back in 2007. And yeah, you bet I would. As a matter of fact, with the Captain Seriously project that I do in Chelsea, I got a taste of that because they made mascots of my characters that I created for that project. And while this was not a fan making it for me, this was something where the organization I worked with made them to like help reinforce the messaging of the comic books that I make for them. I probably upset a poor teenage volunteer who was dressed up as my character Dame Lady Cat when I ran at her and not screaming the kid's name, but screaming Dame Lady Cat, can I get my picture with you? I was not prepared for what happened to me emotionally seeing my characters in three dimensions like that. It was pretty profound. And so, yes, if I ever saw a cosplayer of my characters, you bet I'd lose it. You bet I would. But I'm, you know, Rob asked me a question. I answered, what's one of the advantages? That's one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if maybe we're going to try to land on final thought.
Okay. Sure.
And I don't know if it's going to be an easy one.
Okay.
But maybe riff with me here. So then how do you get this machine going of let's say you're open enough to be motivated by, well, okay, I want to build toward this mission thing. I want to put more effort into it than has worked out so far. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's worthwhile. I want to plant a flag and where either I'm being recruited or I'm recruiting other people to work with me. How do I start? Because all this other stuff is there a really small way to get the ball moving if it's not even rolling?
Okay. I mean, I can think of a number of stories from my past that where I either bumped into it or figured it out. Maybe we can riff on some of those ideas for a little bit. I'm sure you have some experiences that are similar, but I think that's a good question. Okay. So how about we take one more break and then we'll take that on? Like, how do you get started, or how do you find the signals that have the meaning in them? What do you look for? And then how do you nurture those into a mission and a statement of mission? Does that sound?
I like it.
Okay.
That's good. Yep.
All right. All right. Well, we're going to do that in just about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. But we got to thank some more people who make this show possible. Those people happen to be us. We make this show possible, and we make a whole bunch of stuff. And the stuff that we make informs the thoughts that we bring to the show. And the thing that I make that I hope you will engage with and participate with in some way is the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival. First of all, I hope you come out to it if you can. It's June 14th, 15th, and 16th of this year, 2019. But the immediate thing that you can do, and there's only like a month and change to interact with this, is the Kids Comics Awards. The ballot has dropped. The final nominations have been cast for the 7th annual Kids Comics Awards. And what is it? It is, it first of all, it's a cute little Lego trophy. I'm going to scroll down so you can see the cute little Lego trophies. Rob's actually participated in the award ceremony once or twice. So there's the trophies. They're these little custom-made Lego trophies that are given to cartoonists who make work that is made especially for kids. And we it starts out with an initial nominating ballot where we like invite kids to nominate their favorite books from the previous year. But then that list is handed over to a panel of librarians and educators who select the final nominees. And then the only people who can vote for the winners are kids. So if you know somebody under the age of 17 who really enjoyed some of the books on this list from last year, please invite them to vote. They can vote via online ballot at a2caf.com/kidscomicsawards. That same link will take you to a PDF ballot that you can download. They can write it out on paper and then mail it in. So if you prefer to do it that way, that is available as well. However, if you mail it in, there is a different deadline. Voting is open via online ballot until 6 p.m. June 15th, 2019. It says 2017 on the site. I got to fix that. But if you mail in your paper ballot, you have to mail it in no later than June 7th, 2019, to ensure that it gets to us in time. So once again, it's a2caf.com/kidscomicsawards. Only kids can vote, and that's what makes this award special, because the people who won know that their readers voted for them, not a panel of experts, not some, you know, very well-informed and educated jury. No, these are the people who are actually reading their books, who are telling them that yours is our favorite this year. So a2caf.com/kidscomicsawards. Rob, what do you want to promote this week?
Oh, let's go with art and science punks.
All right. There it is. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, I make this other podcast with my wife, Kate Shield Stenzinger, and it's called Art and Science Punks. And what it is that, I mean, we're informal and playful with the kind of just ongoing learning. We bring different art activities, science activities, and are just enthusiasts as well. So we share like some favorite picks that we've seen out and about in the world for art and science. And we just share stories of like the things that we made and tried. And, you know, sometimes things don't go well. Recently, I did start what might be a series that of interviewing Kate about her planning. Right. She sort of turned this on me a few times as far as like, all right, we're going to dig into how you think about whatever. Right. And it's like, all right, well, let's see where this goes. And but it's a lot of fun. And yeah, Kate really has a lot of talent related and practice related to planning in a really thoughtful way as it thinks of the different people that she's involved with that I just wanted to dig into. And we started that with episode 66, Planning Mind. You can check out the podcast, subscribe to it. Just search for Art and Science Punks. It's in all the portals, but you can go to straight to the website as well, which is at artsciencepunks.fireside.fm.
And if you are already subscribed and you haven't done so yet, giving it a rating, you know, go give it a 5-star rating wherever you listen to it. That helps more people find the show. And it's a really good show if you haven't checked that out. It's Kate is excellent. And I feel like more people should be listening to Kate's thoughts. But if you're here because you don't really care about the other things we do, you're just here for Lean Into Art after all. And I like the way Jersey and Rob chew on ideas. Well, we got more stuff like that at leanintoart.com/workshops, where you can download self-contained videos at a price of your choosing, even free. You don't even have to pay anything for it. If you're watching the video on YouTube, giving it a thumbs up helps more people find the show. And if you're listening to the show in a podcatcher like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, giving Lean Into Art a 5-star rating wherever you listen to it helps more people find the show. Man, if you really want to go above and beyond, you know, writing a review, you know, telling people what you like about the show is super useful. And thank you to everybody who has been doing that. It means a lot to us.
It does. Thank you so much.
Okay. So, final thought. How do you start?
You were talking about, so how do you find the signals and then how do you like sort of grow a statement of mission? Mm-hmm. And I had the angle of I mean, being convinced enough to start, right?
And well, what convinces you?
Because it's kind of big. Let's see. What convinces me, I guess I'd have to rewind a bit. I mean, what convinces me now is just about, you know, finding great next missions and stuff like that and collaborators to work with. That's very motivating because I learn a ton based on the people I work with. And it feels great when I'm doing something I believe in. So recently, and I think we talked about it, I did some updates to my portfolio and different like supporting writing and stuff, right? And like, can you fill in this blank? All right. So here's the prompt. I'm here to blank. So what's your purpose? And this is the rough version of my mind right now. I'm here to spread the tools of human-centered, systemic-minded design as far and wide as I can. There you go. And so a lot of things can come out of that. It can inform themes I choose to write and podcast about or tweet or like or share, retweet, whatever. But like to get there, I mean, that was fumbly and I maybe could have got there sooner. And I've had different like working versions of it along the way. The getting started, I think it was because I knew that somewhere within me was a convincing explanation and I just didn't have it yet. And I know that I think some of it too is I luckily sometimes through passion and stuff coming out of my mouth, I land on something because I see people react and I'm like, oh, what did I just say? Because I like channel the thing from my heart and it's like the right thing. And sometimes I then write that down, which is probably one of the reasons why I carry a notepad all the time. I don't know. How about you? Like, this is
it's a
big difference if you think about where you're going next and versus like how you got started and all that.
Yes. And I mean, I'm hearing from you is that you didn't arrive at the I'm here to blank until you tried a few different kinds of things.
Yeah. And I think one thing I get distracted by is instead of trying to talk to that persona, think of who you're trying to serve and talk to them. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have a shorter path. You'll get there sooner as opposed to thinking about the functional neatness of the stuff you make. And having it about the medium and the skills of the practice. It's not about that. It's about the benefit that it brings to someone else's life. What are they here to do? And I know like, gosh, everything in design, designers are so funny, super. And I'm no exception, but like something that we've mentioned before, which is the jobs to be done is an interesting way to frame. And there's a huge pushback on it right now, whatever. But the idea of how do people relate to you? Think of how do you present what you care about so much in a way that's relatable to them. And I think that's a helpful perspective taking thing to try to do. And that'll help you generate it. And then it's essentially a hypothesis. It's an assumption. It's an idea you can test because it doesn't mean you landed it, but you have this seed, this core of belief and purpose that is better than not having it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
In a way, it's like a magnet. It's like a magnet pointing in one direction. Some stuff will push away, and other stuff will attract to it.
Yep. I bumped into all of my like signals to help me refine my mission and purpose. And the example I always think of and always come back to because it's old, but it gives me a lot of clarity. It's a useful metaphor. Is this idea that an online pundit technologist named Tim Street said that, you know, networking isn't going to a party and handing out business cards. Networking is going to a party and listening to all the conversations happening around you and waiting until you hear unambiguously where you can be helpful, where you could be useful, and where you can, you know, solve problems for people. And you'll know it when you hear it, right? And so, like, the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival, and I've told the story a bunch of times, the way it got started was I met Dan Mishkin at a convention. We hit it off. He handed me this flyer that said, I want to make a convention in Michigan that is aimed there, that is meant for to serve children. And in 2006, I had no idea how I could help him with that, but I thought it's a wonderful idea. If I can ever figure out how to help you, I will. And then the next year I started teaching. And then once I saw like what I could contribute to that dynamic, then I reached out to him. Right. So like in 2008, I was like, hey, remember when we met, you told me about this thing? I think what if you did a convention where it took place in a library and there's like hands-on activities all the time? Because that would solve the problems for the library of creating meaningful experiences for kids. And it would give us the venue and the infrastructure to start a convention. Right. But it wasn't immediately apparent to me, right? The creating meaningful experiences between kids and comics wasn't language that I had until years later, after just seeing very unambiguously and clearly how I could help in this particular arena. Now, when I reached out to Dan, I had no like lofty ambitions of like, I'm going to be part of this nonprofit organization and, you know, I'm going to be doing this for 10 years. It was like, yeah, let's see what we could do. Could we do something neat? You know, and that first year we did it, it was, I think, I want to say maybe like 200-300 people came out. It was one day. We just did it in an afternoon. You know, it was only a couple hundred people at the show, but I remember Dan put his arm around me. He was like, I think we did something really great for kids today. You know, and like that felt really good. And I was like, okay, let's keep doing that. Cause that felt good. Right. It wasn't something where I sat down, you know, and had this flash of brilliance when I was 10 years old saying, someday, you know, I'm going to sing this song about how I want to make a bunch of kids happy. And then, you know, through many trials and a very, really cool design villain, I'm going to make that thing happen. I kind of bumped into the walls. Like it was like, Ray Bradbury once described writing as, being very similar to, what did he say? Being drunk and in charge of a bicycle, you know? And I feel like that's,
that's great.
I feel like that's a lot of my experience in like finding the things that mean something to me.
I couldn't do that process without some form of journaling and reflection and then planning.
Yeah.
Because it's like throwing an airplane, a paper airplane over and over and having to remake it and keep throwing it. And then looking back and saying like, where the heck have I been? Why am I doing this? Yeah. And the questioning and the observing and writing, that helps form helps it come into existence, because like what you mentioned is a bit of the genius myth, right? So I don't know. Now I wonder if like the whole the Disney formula on the hero's journey, does that just reinforce the genius myth? So
yeah, it's a very easy to understand sort of journey, right? Like a flash of inspiration happens and you realize that the world's no longer the same.
It can happen.
But it's not common to my experience. And another thing I like about that Tim Street metaphor of what networking really is it puts the emphasis on listening. And I think that is a crucial part of this, is that like, I don't post on Twitter as much as I read Twitter, right? I'm listening all the time to what everybody is saying and reading what everybody is saying. And I'm listening to the problems that people are expressing, the pain people express and the joy people express. And I don't know what to do with it. Right. I'm not sitting here going like, I'm listening to this information and I'm doing like extensive research in order to create this product. It's like, it's just like that tap is always on. That listening is happening as much as I can, because I never know when I'm going to find the place where I can be helpful.
That's it right there. I love it. And you're giving me hints at how I might evolve the coat of arms.
Cool.
Is that because it's implied, but it needs to be clarified.
Very cool.
Listening.
Yeah. Like listening is everything, right? Well, mm-hmm. it's a lot of it.
It's a lot. I mean, listening to yourself is part of it too.
Yeah.
The whole like, what do I want? What am I about to sing about in my want song? Okay. Nice to know that it is. It's important. Yeah. It's a factor. It's an element. But like that community, like it doesn't come out of your imagination. It comes out of the world. So what better way to go about it? But then pay attention.
Well, that's good. Rob, I think we did a podcast.
I think we did. Right.
Okay. We record this show on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central. No, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. I'm flipping around. We stream it live on YouTube, and then we collect it as a podcast at leanintoart.com and patreon.com/leanintoart. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey Drozd on Instagram.
And just like you, Jersey, I'm also from leanintoart.com as myself, Rob Stenzinger, and I am Rob Stenzinger on Instagram.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.